Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 80, for March 12th, 2008. The 30% Solution. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/MacBreak. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations. It's time for MacBreak Weekly number 80, our octogenarian episode. So if any of you are octogenarians, show of hands.
I'm getting there.
Scott Bourne. You know, Scott, you keep saying that, but you and I are the same age. So can you not do that? Because it's making me feel old.
I'm just a tad older than you.
A tad is right. Like what, a year, 2 years? Not much older.
Yeah, enough. You'll see in the next 12 months what I mean.
When your hair starts to get gray. Okay, and instead of having four girls on your arms, you only have two. Of course, Hugh Hefner's in his 80s, and he's got four.
Yeah, well.
Scott Bourne is, of course, from Podango.com, the Apple Phone Show, GirlsGoneGeek.tv, and iLife Zone, and anything.
This Week in Photography.
Oh, I forgot TWiP. You and Alex do TWiP.
We got knocked out of the number one spot by that lousy Apple company, but other than that.
Did you get to number one on iTunes?
No. In the tech area, we're still floating around the top 20 in the iTunes.
I think the highest we got was iTunes. Seven.
I really have to emphasize this. Congratulations on that. And nobody stays up there because it's just like a Billboard chart. It's what have you done for me lately? It's only today's heavily weighted, and then the rest of the week. And after that, subscriptions don't matter. So it's not a total subscription count or a total listener count. And that's not clear in iTunes. But it's ballistic. And so, of course, you didn't stay there, but you got there, and that's the point.
And the number of new people that have been joining, or are continuing to watch.
Well, that's what it shows. If you stay in the top 10 or 20, it means new people, lots of new people all the time. I don't know no one knows exactly what it means, but what is it, 1,000 a day or 5,000? Nobody knows. Apple doesn't say.
Right. But it's been a very successful show. We're having a lot of fun with
it. I listen and watch. I should say, and watch, because you're doing something interesting. You're doing both audio and video in the same.
Yeah, and screencast.
I think we're going to end up doing shooting video. The idea was that a lot of people are going to want both pieces of information.
Well, especially for a photography show, a visual show.
Exactly. It seems odd to be doing an audio show, but there's a lot of people that like to listen to it. And we've learned, mostly from your example, actually, that the audio shows oftentimes do much better than the video shows. So the idea is to have the audio show as the main drive, but also to be adding these video additions to it as we move forward. So
yeah, I think that makes sense. No, but I don't know of anybody else who's combining audio and video on the same RSS feed. And I'd be very curious as to how people react to that as I move into more video. Hey, let me introduce Andy. Before we get into that discussion, let me introduce Andy Anako, because he's just sitting there quietly, pretending he's not there until we say his name.
I'm a little mouse. None of you can see me or feel me. I'll be out to get me cheese when you're gone for the night.
Oh, he's a little leprechaun mouse, actually. Andy Anako from the Chicago Sun-Times. And
yes,
the celestial waste of bandwidth.
Folks, there's a hole in your life, a part of your life you've been ignoring. I have absolutely no intentions of filling that hole in your life, but at least I'll kill 15 minutes of work.
That's all that really matters.
Yes.
You know, like you, like me, you know, we don't want to overshoot.
Exactly. I'm promising that I'll entertain myself. I will put off doing the work I'm supposed to be doing while I'm writing about buying pants on the internet. If you guys enjoy it, good. Unfortunately, I don't have enough of an audience that I can start exploiting you yet, but that'll come in 4, 5, 6, 7 months.
I particularly enjoyed your couch side play-by-play of Steve Jobs' SDK announcement.
Yeah, I did see. I couldn't really afford to fly. I can't usually make it profitable for me to fly to San Francisco from Boston for every single media event. And so I thought I would just live blog it from my sofa while I'm, you know, watching Dirty Jobs on the TiVo and eating a sandwich.
and
people seem to like it. And I don't think I asked any stupider questions of Steve Jobs that actually got asked there. So I think I'll put that in the win column.
Our friend, my friend, maybe not Scott's friend, Ryan Blockerman Gadget, took a little heat for his question. We'll get to that in a second. But first, there are several big stories in the Mac world this week. Of course, the biggest one is the Apple SDK announcement. Of course, it happened last Thursday. We thought we might do a special, but you know, we figured, hey, give us some time to look at it, play with it. We'll probably have something more intelligent to say the following week. So that's one subject. Of course, the Beatles on iTunes, another subject, a big subject. I guess there's a few other stories, but I think those are pretty big. Let's start with the SDK announcement. Scott, you were there.
No, I didn't go.
You didn't go?
I had to go to Seattle. So I did not make it, but I was able to participate through any number of live blogs, as were many people. And it did dawn on me that I'm not so sure why I do go when I do go, since I don't know that I get any information being in the crowd that I can't get from sitting there looking at the 40 or 50 blogs that are pointed at the thing. But
did you stick with one, or did you watch a couple of different ones, or how did you do that?
I actually had two different computers. I had my desktop and my laptop fired up, and I had two different blogs open at once, and Gadget was not one of them.
That's who I watched.
I got some interesting information. I think I got the ambiance of what was going on, and I came away from it very, very excited. I was expecting a lot less than what we got, frankly. And, you know, I've said this on a couple other shows, but I think the really big news was the Kleiner Perkins announcement. As a business guy, $100 million fund being out there legitimizes the iPhone as a platform the way nothing else Steve Jobs could have done that day did. And to have, you know, John Doerr come up and say, we think this is a big deal. I mean, let me tell you, that might have something to do with the fact that Apple today announced that they've got more than 100,000 downloads of the SDK.
Yeah. I downloaded it immediately, and I paid my $99. I'm still waiting for you have to be approved to get your certificate so that you can actually deliver applications.
You are correct, sir. And they said that's going to take them a while to catch up.
Yeah. So there,
it's a big deal.
There were three separate announcements, really. There was the SDK, and for developers and users, that might be the one that we're paying a lot of attention to. But for business users, I think a huge announcement that they support Exchange and they've licensed ActiveSync. So if you're using Windows and you have an Exchange server at work, this is a strong competitor to the BlackBerry.
And some people have said it might even deliver the information in a way that supersedes the way the BlackBerry does because of some of the server-side requirements in the IT configuration for BlackBerry users.
You don't have to run a BlackBerry server, for one thing. Many people are running Exchange and don't want to put the BIS on there. The other, I think or BES, I can't remember what it is. The other issue is, as Steve Jobs brought up, spreading a little FUD, is do you really want all your mail sent through Waterloo, Canada? It goes to Canada, you know. The other big announcement, as you said, was the big announcement of $100 million venture fund to support iPhone applications. But I have to say, just looking at people like Electronic Arts and the glee with which they greeted the three-axis accelerometer in there, they see another Wii.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And now people will be throwing their iPhones through the window.
The iPhone, and by the way, everything we say applies to the touch as well.
Right.
The iPhone and the touch don't have any other controls. They have one button. So for gaming, it has to be touch or accelerometer.
Not necessarily. That's kind of what makes it so cool. Just to show you how exciting the world has gotten from the SDK, I went out to dinner with a developer friend of mine and their kid. And the kid, who's 10 years old, was already mapping out the great aerial combat game he wanted to make for the iPhone. Mm. And of course, he's only like nine. So he's going to be 10 and a half before his programming skills are way better than mine. So I could still be the indulgent, you know, tutor saying, well, here you go. Here's my iPhone. I'm going to hold it in my hands, figure out how you'd like the controls to go. And then I realized that, wait a minute, this is awesome. With no physical buttons on the iPhone, I could just decide that, okay, the top left corner of the screen is going to be one button. The top right corner of the screen, as I hold, is going to be another button. I can basically tilt it one way to jink left, tilt it the other way to go right. The idea that you can basically build a gamepad that's suited specifically toward the game you want to make, it'd be like the control pads in Star Trek.
Right. Except that your screen is moving at the same time as you're moving the controller, which could be...
For some things it's not going to be any good, but for many things
for Monkey Ball it's perfect.
Right. For Flight Simulator it's going to work just fine because you're kind of, you know, you'll get a little bit of torso, like you'll get ripped abs because you're sort of, you know, moving your body from side to side in the seat, you know, as you're shifting from left to right. So, you know, you spot like someone who is like 250 pounds but with killer abs, you'll be spotting an iPhone gamer, definitely.
I can't wait. When they saw Spore, I practically spored my pants. I mean, I was very excited about that.
But didn't it really surprise you that Apple pushed that button so hard? Because traditionally, they've made a lot of noise about caring about games, but they've never gotten dropped down to their knees and begged, please develop games for iPhone. We really, really, really want this to be a gaming platform. I would never have predicted that of all the things I could have said were going to come out of that announcement, that Apple would really, really push that button that hard.
I don't know. I've been saying that the Touch and the iPhone are the ultimate gaming platforms for some time.
Oh, they are. But the fact that Apple would actually realize this.
Yeah. You know, shock.
Hey, you know that big bag of money that we've been stepping over for the past 30 years? Maybe we should just bend down and pick it up. Let's give that a try.
I think that one of the things about games, I think, that really works for Apple is that they fit inside of the sandbox created by the SDK really, really well. They're running when you're actually playing them. They don't really need to get a lot of resources. Doom evidently would not run under the current SDK, I guess, because of some of the scripting. It's, you know, so if they have scripting in them, it's more problematic. But straightforward games are really, you know, they don't push the envelope of what you want to do with your phone. I mean, that's the issue that some people are having, of course, is the SDK has, you know, certain limitations, which I think are totally reasonable, but they limit where you can go in business or production or other things that you might want to do, whereas games I don't think do. And so I think it's a really good...
What are the limits? One, we know you can't do VoIP on Edge. You have to use Wi-Fi.
Also, the program will stop running when you go to another program.
No multitasking allowed. Now, I think you can make a strong case for multitasking being the source of course, instability, but also critical security problems. And while, you know, and the platforms that allow multitasking, which is Windows Mobile and somewhat BlackBerry, they really cause problems. They run out of memory. You know, on the BlackBerry, you can accidentally leave the GPS going and kill the battery in an hour.
Let me ask you, I've heard a few of the developers criticize that, but, you know, I've had my iPhone since June, and as far as I know, I've only been able to enjoy one application on it at a time, and it hasn't seemed like any problem to me.
Here's a good example. Let's say you want to do an AIM client, a chat IM client. Every time the phone rings, you're logged off of Instant Messenger, and every time you end the phone call, then you can rerun the application, but you've missed whatever's happened. Now, of course, you could save state online. I mean, if you're using AIM, AOL could save your chats while you're on the phone, and then pump them down to you, but that's a significant back end change.
I'm not saying that there wouldn't be any utility in being able to do it, Leo, but I'm just saying right now Apple doesn't let even Apple do it. So,
well, but Apple doesn't have significant. I mean, Apple doesn't have Apple. Notice Apple has no chat application.
I mean, right. And I think what we're going to need to see in some of these applications is people giving you a choice. Do you want the phone to interrupt your application? Would you like the phone?
Well, they don't have the choice though. Right now, the SDK requires it.
Yeah, I know. And what I'm getting at is the apparent willingness of Apple to, you know, give and take a little so far might move that direction just a bit. I do think that there's reason to consider some of the changes that developers want, and that's half the reason for putting out a beta SDK.
Sure. And there are real security issues by keeping applications running in the background. I mean, as I said, you could make a good case that that's good for stability and security.
Now, let's take a guess here. What do you think to Apple is the bigger consideration? Which one is more important, the security of the device and the network it runs on, or the stability of that one phone in that one user's pocket?
Well, both. But security number one, wouldn't you say?
I don't know. The Apple I know will be thinking the first time that this user has to restart in the middle of something, the first time that I thumb the power button and I get a black screen or I get an Apple logo when I thought that was going to be getting back to my email, if that becomes a regular occurrence, because that was always the biggest frustration on my Windows mobile phones.
Sure,
I like Windows mobile phones, but I was always, it seemed like once a day I would have to delete stuff out of memory because it didn't recognize it. Well, geez, you've got a 1 gigabyte micro SD card in there, but I need to play in the 64K playpen. 64 megs felt like 64K.
Yeah, I mean, that crash is bad, but Apple also doesn't want to be the first phone to support spyware and viruses, you know, and have a widespread problem with that. That would be a bad announcement as well.
But it's interesting to sort of consider what limitations are they willing to put on the device, and why are they willing to put those limitations on there? And I think that when we're talking about how flexible a platform becomes when you have lots and lots of apps that can run simultaneously and do things and enhance the user experience all at once, to remove that, I think that sort of demonstrates that they want the iPhone, number one, to be a very, 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 very stable and very, very predictable, a reliable tool for people. I think maybe one point behind that is the security of people's contact information and stuff, and the security of the network.
And 60 points behind that is what the developers want.
Right.
Oh. it's like that scene of the Blues Brothers. We have this list of requests from developers. Well, these don't matter. They're just requests. Play regular set.
What?
Other things that are limited, by the way, are, you know, some people are complaining, is the, you know, you can't do things like interpreted code, programs within programs. You can't launch another application. You know, those are the things that obviously create a lot more stability, I think, and a lot more security. But they make certain things like Java and everything else not in the current structure work.
Speaking of Java, have you listened to all the noise Sun is making about Java? And hey, we'll play. You know, you and Nomi aren't getting along.
And then it turns out that the EULA might prevent that, or the agreement in the SDK might prevent them from playing, right?
Which I thought was also funny.
Yeah, Flash too. I mean, you could write a Flash plugin. You could write anything. You could write Sky.
Yeah, hey, you want? I'll tell you right now what the problem is with Flash. I found out it's all about Apple wanting to be able to use its own version of like Preview or something to read the PDFs as opposed to Adobe's.
Well, I don't blame them. I hate that the Adobe Acrobat keeps it stalling its ugly ass on my Mac.
What I'm saying though is that's the holdup.
Good.
That's the only reason why Flash isn't on the iPhone, in my opinion. That's the holdup. And if Adobe will grant Apple that argument, I think we'll see Flash on the phone and they'll change things around. But I did think it was very interesting to see Sun making all that noise, and I just thought that was kind of funny.
I don't know if I want Java on the iPhone, to be honest with you.
Oh, boy, I'm right there with you, man.
On the other hand, it does open a world of applications.
Yeah, like, hello, my name is Igor. $1,000 from your PayPal account.
I would much rather see, at this point, Silverlight, Flash, and Air. How about you, Alex? Now you must have some people thinking about developing for the iPhone.
Oh yeah. We've been having almost daily discussions about kind of the wish list. Now we're really, because the market is so big, we're really looking at our little niche around production and so on and so forth is where we should kind of keep what we know. And so we're definitely looking at all the different options that we can get into with developing for the iPhone. But we expect when things start to open up, we'll have a bunch of products related to that, because we're super excited about it. There's all kinds of things we could do on a set in production, you know, so on and so forth. That would be, we think, a lot of fun and very useful. You know, I think that's going to be the key, though, for developers, is to find the niche that they do well, that they know well. It's going to, you know, there's 100,000 people who have downloaded the SDK, and everyone going towards building a Twitter client, for instance, you know.
How many hundred Twitter clients are there going to be?
Yeah, so that's probably not, you know, I'm going to try not to go towards the field that everyone seems to be running for. I'm going to look for a field that I can, a little field that I can live in.
But, well, and if you've ever done any Xcode development work, you're going to be very at home. This is Xcode. It uses Interface Builder. It uses all the tools you're used to. uses Objective-C. It looks like it's almost, you know, well, I loved what they did at the rollout where they said, well, if you had 2 days, what would you do? If you had 2 weeks, what would you do? I mean, I thought that was really effective in saying, look how quickly you can do stuff.
Didn't AOL say that they needed 2 weeks to get the AIM client working?
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. 2 weeks to get that kind of application running.
Yeah. Well, the bigger issue is, as I said earlier, if you've got AIM, what happens when you leave AIM and then log back in? Are you going to have lost all of those, or is it easy enough on their back end for them to preserve that and then push them down to you? Because it's no good to have a chat client where every time your phone rings, you miss 4 or 5 or 6 messages.
Well, it's also got to be kind of annoying that Apple is not simply shipping iChat on the iPhone as part of the regular 2.0. There has to be something contractual with AT&T that forbids them, because that's just such a natural, don't you think?
Yeah, and I guess the reason AT&T wouldn't like it, it would undermine text messaging, yes?
Yeah, well, that's the only possible reason for them not simply saying, look, we've got iChat for the iPhone, we've got Safari for the iPhone, we've got Mail for the iPhone, we've got the whole troika.
Yeah, makes sense.
Did you see the one of the first little iPhone apps that was shown as an example? This was, I guess, especially for this is on the unofficial Apple weblog. It was especially for Merlin.
a GTD app?
It is a to-do app.
Yay. Yeah. Well, you figure that's the first thing. You're going to have a notes application that finally syncs. You're going to have a to-do app that finally syncs.
An app that rolls 7-sided die. That's tip calculator. We're going to see. It seems like every time there's a brand new platform, dating back to the Apple II, the first 10 applications are always the same. I think there should be like a $30 like Outback Steakhouse gift card for the first person to make a recipe organizer for the iPhone, just to make it official.
Right.
I just like to say that right now I would like to get first dibs on being Merlin's agent for negotiating how much he gets paid to put his blessing on the, you know, the once in a lifetime GTD app for iPhone.
Yeah, that's
just like on the PlayStation. There's John Madden football.
Yeah,
on the iPhone.
Merlin GTD.
It'll be getting things done. The iPhone edition with Merlin Man.
Well, I know he would want to point out that it's Dave Allen, of course, who created getting.
Dave Allen's going to be like, "What happened?
Yeah,
what happened?"
But also, I have to say, in Merlin's credit and to defend him, he always avoids those opportunities. I've never seen a man more anxious not to receive money.
I know, and he and I need to have a very long talk.
We get our advertising checks. I divvy it up. I said, okay, give me your social, Merlin. I'm going to send you a check. He said, oh, no, keep it. I said, Merlin, I had to talk him into taking the money.
Well, that's because he makes like $100 million a year, 43-fold.
He must be so wealthy. He's secretly got a submarine in his basement.
It's yellow, too.
Yeah, maybe. There is, of course,
assumed name. He has no working social security number.
But happy
he would find out the truth about himself.
He's
KGB. His real name.
he's Merlin Putin. So Merlin Badenov. So at least when the announcement came out, and I think it's died down a little bit. But developers, especially on Twitter, were saying 30%. Apple says, first of all, apps can only be sold through the App Store, which will be part of iPhone 2.0. Nah, that's pretty nice because it gets right there on the iPhone. You click it and you download it and you got it. But they said no other way to put apps, third-party apps on the iPhone, which keeps the cracking community alive. They also said we will charge a modest 30% just to cover our expenses. A few developers said, whoa, is that too much?
No.
Amazon charges 50.
50?
Yeah. And if you were to look at the cost of distribution, I mean, in the real world, I'm not talking about in the online world where counterculture rules, but in the real world of business where you look at distribution channel cost, 30% to get yourself in front of this many eyeballs.
Yeah, the big advantage, I think, is that because there's only going to be one outlet for a developer, if you can make it through the gauntlet of getting it onto the getting it approved and getting it onto iTunes, it means that everybody is looking in one place for those applications. When you build your niche app, people who are looking for that are going to come to that one location. And I think that as someone who's going to be a developer for the iPhone, I think that's beneficial to us.
Particularly
I'd kill for that kind of opportunity in all the other businesses I have. Leo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, particularly if this if it lends the same sort of iTunes browsing tools where there are going to be 50 to-do list managers, but right. if it gives me that big bar that says, well, look, 80,000 people have bought this one and liked it. Here are 85-star reviews of it, as opposed to the thing that some kid did in one day and then totally forgot about it. But I mean, I talked to a lot of independent Mac developers, people who support themselves with one or two famous programs, and surprisingly, I was expecting a lot of pushback, but surprisingly, they're all pretty much cool with it. One of them said that, well, I mean, obviously, I don't like giving away any money, but the thing is, I was prepared to give as much as 40, and I think that if Apple took less than 20%, they couldn't do this. So I think the 30% is really quite reasonable.
That's just fair. And that's what Apple's saying. This is our cost. They use Akamai, which is very expensive. You don't pay any bandwidth costs. You do get great exposure. However, Apple controls absolutely what apps can and cannot be on the phone. So if you've got an app that Apple decides they don't like, let's say Skype, it's too bad. Apple will probably wield the same kind of power there that they wield, say, for podcasts, where they feature the ones they like. They don't feature the ones they don't like. It may not be an equal playing field for all developers.
Well, that's okay, because developers still have the responsibility to promote and sell their own work. It's just that now they have this extra tool, this extra engine that's supporting you. I mean, I've had a couple of podcasts and was featured once. My test podcast, which unexpectedly sort of got more popular than I wanted to get. But I mean, it was still my responsibility after it fell off those lists to tell people about it and promote it.
Right,
so I don't see that as a big deal.
Yeah. All right. Just raising those issues. I think we'll have to wait and see how heavy-handed Apple is with it. I think they could be heavy-handed.
My bigger concern is like if they're doing things that are not security related and not safety related, not stability related, when they simply say, look, we don't want like animated interactive stripper games on the iPhone. We just don't want to be associated with that, so we're not going to allow that. And that was one of the specific things that they nixed during the event.
What? No strip poker?
Damn. Well, you can play strip poker, just not with your iPhone. It'll be interesting the first time that this is the example I keep coming up with. Then the first time that partypoker.com or one of these online poker games wants to say, look, we know it's illegal to do, it's kind of legally dodgy to do real online poker in the United States, but we're just going to give the free game that we have on our site. And if they nix that one, that's going to be an interesting. I predict that the message boards on various pro and anti Apple forum, they're going to be reasonable, rational, and very, very calm when they talk about what that means for the Republic.
Yeah,
but you know what? Who cares? Those Apple discussion forums are cesspools anyway, and they go nuts and say all these crazy things, and Apple continues to gain market share. I have to tell you, I coming from the perspective of someone, I hate to keep bringing this up, Leo, but me, you, and Scoble standing out in front of the restaurant at the Jaiku party, you guys both showing off your N95s, both of you having them crash while you're showing them to me, most likely because of third-party apps. I don't want that experience on the iPhone, and I'm okay with Apple making sure I don't get it. I realize that may not be the most popular position to take. I understand the concerns about the monopoly stuff, and I hope we get competition from other products that keep them honest, but it's like when you go into Denny's, they got a sign that says no shirt, no shoes, no service. You can choose to eat there or not.
Right. Does the iPhone not crash?
Mine hasn't crashed hardly at all.
I've had two lockups in a year that I can remember.
I've had three
probably
or four.
The same for me.
That's a lot better than any other phone out there, I think.
Yeah.
It's more stable than my laptop.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, certainly you want to keep that. A phone is no good unless it's reliable, especially a phone. I don't mind Apple doing that. I think that if they do it for those reasons, nobody's going to complain. If they do it for, quote, moral reasons or for, worse yet, anti-competitive reasons, people are going to complain. And you can bet.
And if they do it for anti-competitive reasons, they're going to get their butt in court.
Well, this is the example. We talked about this on Twit. This is the obvious freight train coming right at them. Amazon.com is going to want to put a music store on there. A simple thing to do. They're probably developing it right now. Does Apple allow them to? And if they don't, how long before they get, go to court?
I guess Apple could respond with, hey, that's not a problem. Let us just put, iTunes up on Amazon.com.
Yeah, but that's not quite
parody.
I can't think of an offline Amazon store that would be of any usefulness unless it was doing something really cool, like let you scan a barcode from a friend's book and store it. store it away so that I can look it up later on.
What if they just sold their music?
Well, you know,
I'm thinking Apple would want that deal myself. Maybe I'm wrong.
The problem with that is you can buy the music online through the iPhone, but what are you going to do with it once it's there? Unless you have a good one, you have to ship it with a music player, but I'm not sure that's a good thing to compete with.
I think Amazon would be more likely to build an order app that uses the phone camera before they try to do a music deal.
And that would be a great app too. Now that I don't see Apple stopping them from doing that. I think where they would stop them is if they did a music store, a direct head to head competitor to iTunes.
Here's the real bomb. There's always been rumors that Apple wants to add books to the iTunes store. There've always been rumors about how publishers have this deal with Apple where they just keep sending shovelfuls of books to Cupertino for scanning. What if that rumor is actually true, that they're actually planning on doing that at some point? And now Amazon is saying, hey, guess what, Apple? We're going to give you something really great. The iPhone is going to be the only other device other than the Kindle that can buy electronic books from the Amazon store and read them.
Interesting.
What would Apple do then?
I think Apple would have to take that deal, and you know, anything that Apple does that's anti-competitive is also anti-Apple shareholder in some way. So I think the shareholders would eventually revolt if they got too crazy, because they don't want to deal with the kind of lawsuits Microsoft's facing, and it's not good for business. They should make it as open as they can, and you know, keep in mind that 30% that Apple makes, they say it's just to break even. I don't believe that, but. Whether it is or not true, I mean, that's a big incentive to let stuff on the phone. Everybody's talking about, what if they don't let stuff on the phone? Well, they get paid to let stuff on the phone. So, I mean, believe me, it's in their interest.
Well, I think that the other thing is that I think Apple could allow Amazon, for instance, to do the Kindle-type stuff, and they could still launch it on iTunes, and they would still eat up 80 to 90% of the market. Because for me, it would be just easier to deal with iTunes than to go out somewhere, you know, to do something else, just because it's so integrated with the iPhone. And I think for a lot of people, I mean, that's the problem people have, is that it's just easy to do it this way. I'm not going to bother.
Well, but that's why it would be undercutting their business model if all of a sudden there were an easy way to do it with Amazon.com.
I just don't think it would never be as easy. Because
why not? You could exactly Amazon duplicate the experience.
Because Amazon wouldn't have access to my interface. So you have to get things on into a place that I can see them, when it's audiobooks or the, you know, the other stuff within my iPhone. I guess with print stuff, it might be.
Well, you mean the SDK doesn't give you parity in that regard?
Well, no. I mean, I don't think you can. If you're downloading MP3s through something else, you still can't get them into your playlist without iTunes. I mean, that's the way it works right now.
Well,
there's no way.
But that's what I'm asking. Doesn't the SDK give you that capability?
I doubt it. I don't know.
Well, that would
I don't
be a big
know.
Hole.
I don't think that they would do it any other way. I mean, I don't.
Well, that's anti-competitive right there.
You know, I mean, it's the way the system, I don't know, it's the way the system works. It's not like they've changed it.
The consensus on Twitter, which was kind of interesting, and this is, I mean, Jason Calacanis, who certainly has business expertise, is Amazon would just go ahead and do it. It'd take them, they make enough money while they're being sued. Apple would go ahead and do it and just say, no, sorry.
Well, here's the problem Amazon would face, using your example, Leo. If Amazon is selling the Kindle and you can buy books on the Kindle, which is a portable device, and then Amazon says, we want to be able to put them on the iPhone too, making the argument that they have a stranglehold on the market would bounce back to Amazon, because you can only get Amazon stuff on the Kindle. I don't think that's going to
fly. Does the
fact
that it's a phone make it a different...
I think that doesn't have as much to do with it as many people think. I think it mostly has to do with the fact that it's a platform, just like the Kindle is, just like the Mac is. And
I think that also, in some ways, I mean, if Amazon actually wants to make a product out of the Kindle, I don't think necessarily, you know, the issue that they have. I mean, maybe they just want to sell that. Maybe they want to use the Kindle and they're only worried about making money on the content, which is totally viable and quite possible. But the if Apple does follow the rumors and make the twice as large iPhone that's out there.
That's a pretty good reader right there.
Yeah, you're not going to buy a Kindle.
Right. No, you're not.
It's like game over. So now they better be making money on that media, because that's all they're going to get.
Well, you wouldn't buy the Kindle if you can get the books easily and put them on the iPhone. I mean, it's kind of a flip-flop. Amazon does have that kind of power in books compared to Apple, which has that power in music. Amazon has the interface for books. So, you know, yeah, you could put all that together, but unless you have, I mean, the thing about the Kindle is you're browsing the Amazon store and you buy the book and there it is. How would Apple do that?
Several antitrust suits have failed against Amazon in that regard. Several antitrust suits back and forth between the iPod and various MP3 makers have failed. So I don't think there's as many concerns there as folks might want to make out that there are. And I don't think there's any reason to believe that Apple's necessarily going to, once again, going to be anti-competitive because, once again, they get paid. I think there's a reason to believe that they're going to try to default as much as they can, letting stuff on the phone. But think about it from their perspective.
You said they get paid just to break even amount, though.
No, they said they did. I said I didn't believe it.
Oh, you think they're making more money than that? I see.
Absolutely. 30%, I think they are, yeah. And I think that, you know, if they were to let a porn application on the phone, every, you know, group in the world that was against that stuff would sue them for that.
No, I don't particularly want them to do that. I think porn is a bad example. I think the
or
Amazon
gambling or anything
yeah,
else.
I think the Amazon example is the better example because there's no moral turpitude involved. It's simply commerce.
Well, it does illustrate something that might be even bigger, that if Apple is acting as the gatekeeper for software, doesn't that on some legal basis imply that they have certified, they have examined, and they have underscored this app?
Yeah,
exactly.
It does. They've absolutely. They're liable now. Yeah.
Yeah. And because of that, they need to be careful.
Could they waive that, though, in a EULA?
I don't think so.
They would certainly put something in. Because there are already software publishers who can say, look, if you use our contact manager and we lose all your important contacts, right? Or big me, sorry, you're on your own.
Yeah.
But the thing is, there's going to be the first person with a law degree who gets burned is going to be the first person to say, look, you vouched for this app and it really hosed me. You're on my, you got to buy me this house that I wasn't able to buy. And that's all there is to it, Apple. I'm sorry.
I'll be very interested to see what the software, the App Store EULA is. I bet you it disclaims all responsibility for anything that might happen to you in every form or fashion.
Well, you can disclaim anything you want, and people can agree to that disclaimer. It doesn't mean it's going to hold up in court.
Still can be sued, absolutely. Well, I think the absolute consensus is this is a great thing, better even than anybody expected, a much more thorough API, probably worth waiting for. It's hard to develop an API like this. They did a good job, it seems to be. Yes, yeah. We all agree.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. I think, as a developer, go ahead, Andy.
I was just going to say, of all the developers I've spoken to, not one of them has said, gee, I wish they had done this. Yeah. Gee, I wish they had added this. There is something that this is not the rich, wonderful, supportive experience. The feedback I'm getting is not, I don't know if I want to develop apps for this. It's the thing I'm getting is I don't know which app I want to develop first for this.
And you can bet, now here we are almost a week in, you can bet there's apps already to go. People are going to be champing at the bit for iPhone 2.0.
Which is still a ways out, right?
June. That's too long for me.
I think when they launch it, the store is going to have just thousands of apps.
Does this kill the iPhone jailbreaking?
No, the jailbreakers are going to jailbreak forever. It just, there's going to be fewer people that care.
I won't care. I think that you know, I always kept an unjailbroken phone, missed those apps, but I think this is enough to make everybody happy. Yeah.
Well, remember, one of the biggest reasons for the jailbreak isn't to get third party apps; it's to make the phone work in other countries. So if Apple gets the phone working in other countries and then comes out with 2.0 and the SDKs rocking a bunch of apps, I think you'll just hear all the news about jailbreaking die way down.
Well, are you talking about jailbreaking or unlocking?
Well, I'm talking about there's a lot of unlocks that are done in conjunction with jailbreaking.
I learned go ahead.
Actually, that's interesting. I wonder, does anybody know if localization, I know localization is part of SDK, but do you think there's going to have to be an international iTunes store so you can get so you can get a French edition of this app, an Arabic edition of this app?
Great question. Great question.
I would say yes.
That's the way the music works.
I would say yes.
And that's mostly not just because of language as much as it is licensing.
Yep. But that's
all kinds of licensing issues with these different countries. And sometimes it's like, for instance, I got information that the reason that the iPhone isn't going to Canada is a regulatory one, like I've said. But the regulators aren't worried about FCC style regulations. They're worried about a trademark dispute with a Canadian company that has a Canadian mark for iPhone. So there's all kinds of legal minutia to work through when you move this stuff to other countries. So, Andy, that's a great point.
Yeah. Yeah, every EULA would have to be localized as well. I learned something today, that the TSA has a blog.
Oh, boy.
Who knew?
Yeah, I'm going to start reading it every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've had 9 moderators in 8 days. Each of them had to get lobotomies.
It's called The Evolution of Security, tsa.gov/blog. It's a WordPress blog, it looks like. And yeah, a lot of comments. it became apparent that they had a blog when it turned out the MacBook Air, looked like a bomb. I don't know.
Jeez Louise.
These are the folks protecting us.
Well, it looks like a movie prop, not like a, I guess the story that I read was that someone who is not really that smooth on the uptake and frankly has to deal with lots and lots of stuff and be familiar with everything that everybody is ever apt to carry. So let's cut him a little bit of slack. Saw something that looked like a computer, saw that clearly this is way too slim to be a real computer. Yeah. It doesn't even have a DVD drive, for God's sakes. It doesn't even have any actual ports or a replaceable battery. This can't possibly be a computer, thus proving that the TSA agrees with at least 11% of all the message boarders' opinions about the MacBook Air.
I'll read the post from Michael Nygaard's blog, michaelnygaard.com. It's called Wide Awake Developers. He's going on a flight. He's ready to go. Today, something's different. Instead of my bags trundling through the X-ray machine, she stops the belt, calls over another agent, a palaver. Another agent flocks to the screen, a gabble, a conference, some consternation. They pull my laptop. One takes me aside to a partition cubicle. Another, the endless supply of TSA agents, takes the rest of my bags to a different cubicle. No yellow brick road here, just a pair of yellow painted feet on the floor, and my flight is boarding. I'm made to understand that I should stand and wait. My laptop is on the table in front of me, just beyond reach. I'm standing, watching my laptop on the table, listening to security clucking just behind me. There's no drive, one says. And no ports on the back. It has a couple of lines where the drive should be, she continues. A younger agent...
You're making this sound like a Dr. Seuss book. You should do audiobooks. I see no drive. I see no CD. This certainly does not look like a computer to me.
Fortunately, a younger guy comes up and says, no, that's a MacBook Air. Too late. The guy missed his flight. Sorry, Michael. However, the TSA blog now says, well, we're making sure everybody knows what an Air looks like.
This message brought to you by Apple.
It turns out that a gentleman was trapped. This is from the TSA blog. TSOs, the Transportation Safe Security Officers, gave some special attention to his new MacBook. MacBook fans would say the TSOs couldn't resist getting a closer look at a fine piece of machinery. I could tell you TSOs are trained to look for anomalies. Each operator sees hundreds of laptops a day. Some have been doing this for 6 years. You do the math. They know what laptops are supposed to look like. I think in a way this is an ad for the Air.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I'm going to get an Air.
TSA guy is getting a free MacBook from Apple as soon as this has been certified, as soon as this has been affidated, and as soon as the commercial is filmed.
And then
they're just going to get...
And then Stephen Levy writes an article in Newsweek.
Sorry, I know what's coming. Go.
No, you tell us. Apparently, people are losing their Airs because they're so.
Well, no, there's this really well written and really entertaining column that Steve wrote on Newsweek about how he has a loner MacBook Air from Apple, a loner Air.
Yeah.
And so one day he goes to go pick it up off the sofa when he realizes that it's not on the sofa. And he said, geez, what did I do with it? Did I leave it back at the office? Phone call? No, it's not at the office. Geez, did I leave it back at the last press conference? No, I didn't leave it back at the press conference. And the weird thing is that the charger is there. The end of it is hanging right there. And he's trying to figure out what happened to it. And by Sherlockian logic, he realized that, gee, sometimes I kind of like, I set down my computer on the coffee table. It was Sunday. It was on the New York Times Sunday section.
No.
I think I might have dumped the, it was
recycled.
So light and so small.
I think he thought his wife did it. He said his wife
cleans up.
Whose clutter tolerance is well below my own, is according to
Swoop
you.
In. She swoops in, gathers it up, goes to the trash compactor room, dumps it into a plastic recycling bin. You know, I've done stuff like that, but...
I'm very sure that was an episode of Everybody Loves Raymond.
Honey, where's my Air? I think that's funny. You know, I have a loner Air, too. In fact, I've got to figure out where mine is. It's time to send it back.
I'm going to mail it back right in that same inner office envelope they shipped it to me in.
Did they
have a lot of faith in that envelope.
Did they ship it in an inner office envelope to you?
No, I was being humorous.
It would be funny if they did, wouldn't it?
They should just, you know, put it. I'll upgrade it by putting in one of those FedEx bubble pouches.
You know what I'm going to do is I'm going to get one of those envelopes. I'm going to write my name on it. And then I'm going to cross my name out and write Steve Jobs, Apple computer, and then put it in there, and I'm going to give it to send it back to them.
Yeah, see, I didn't want to bring it up because it doesn't make me look very good, but I had to wait a couple of weeks for mine, and when I got mine, my envelope said Steve Levy, cross out, Walt Mosler, cross out, some dude with a porn blog. It was yeah. Black with name. I'm glad I got it. I'm thankful. I'm grateful. A lot of people don't get to borrow these things, but still, it was sort of a punch in the gut.
You and I are in the same boat on that one, Andy and Otko. In fact, I complain, and I'm being very petty on this, but did any of us get invitations to the SDK event?
No.
No.
I didn't, but then again, they only usually invite me if there's going to be a briefing that they can give me later on. Because right. I've already told them that, you know, I've said no so many times that
I... Well, they invite me. I missed the last one because I was in Canada, but they have been inviting me. Yeah. And so I had to point out that the circulation for this show... is actually slightly larger than the largest Mac magazine in existence.
And if you were to add the circulation for the other podcasts that all of us are involved with, where we talk about the iPhone, it's even bigger.
But that's okay.
We only have like 100,000 people at applephoneshow.com listening to the show every month. And of course, you know, they're just there for the iPhone. Yeah. But I guess, that's okay. You know, 10,000 readers of some obscure blog are more important.
A quarter of a million people listen to this show every month. It's okay.
Not that I'm bitter or anything.
It's so petty.
500,000 on my blog, by the way. Just pointing that out.
It's so petty. So now we're up to 1.75 million now or something.
guys, let me tell all of you, I love you. I value all the work you do. And in my eyes, there is no more important.
All right. What's your circulation?
I don't count my circulation, Leo, because all I care about is serving however many readers I have, be it 3 or 3,000 or 300,000.
Sun-times.
Or 3.3 million. Hey, Sam, just put that number up there.
Okay, we're now up to 5 million. I think, frankly, everybody who has a Macintosh listens to one of our products. But that's okay.
It is okay. I mean, I don't take those things. You'll go nuts trying to figure out. Well, geez, I get private briefings like at Macworld Expo, and if I try to figure out how come I got the 2 p.m. slot instead of the 1 p.m. slot, how come I'm seeing this guy instead of this guy?
Yeah, it's
and
petty.
It's not how these things work because they're just trying to manage a major event and they're trying to do things for themselves and for everybody else.
I would just point out that it's not for me that I mention this. It's for our listeners.
It's correct. Exactly. It's them whom the fact that we were uninformed, we were forced over the past hour to make up everything we've just told you because we couldn't bother to read anything online, and we're still bitter about not being there live.
I refuse to read anything online.
People who pay, and that kills me. That kills me, Pete.
I refuse to, because if I'm not invited to the primary source, I'm going to read secondary sources. I don't think so.
That's just good journalism. May as well go to Wikipedia, for God's sakes.
Yeah. Microsoft,
which I've just faced.
Have you? Thank you. Could you modify my entry to say that I dated Cheryl Ladd in the 70s? Just, I'd like to have that on there.
You're going to lie, for God's sakes, lie big.
No, it's the little lies that people believe.
When my Wikipedia page came up and I found it and it's just identified me as American journalist, living person, I thought, you know, I could put that on my business card and still be very, very proud.
That ain't bad.
Andy Anatko, living person, American journalist.
You can't put it on your tombstone, however.
We'll use those rub off letters.
You know? Microsoft said on Tuesday, that would be yesterday, that it released its first update to Office 2008 for Mac. Fixes that should boost stability and performance in some arenas while closing some security holes. You know, this is why I didn't install Office 2008.
Yeah, I installed it. I never had any problems.
Why did you install it? For review purposes, Scott, or do you really need it?
For review purposes, I do occasionally use it. I mean, it's convenient to have. And I mean, it's nothing I rely on. I do most of my real creative work in Pages. That's my preferred, document creation product. But I have to admit, once in a while, especially when I get a file from one of my PC friends, that it's very nice to be able to just quickly open it in Word. And I have to say, it all works pretty well, even before the update.
It's funny because I get doc files, too, and they don't look as good in Word as they do in Pages. I actually open them in Pages, believe it or not.
Well, and you know, this depends on the functionality that you want to preserve. If you're getting these files where, you know, 50 people have marked them up, they sure work a lot better.
Yeah, you're right. The revision tracker doesn't work, of course.
Yeah, that doesn't work in Pages. I agree with you. Just to read a document, Pages is way more beautiful.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do a lot of work back and forth on books and such. I somehow found my way technical editing about 5 books right now.
Well, you need Word then. You're right.
And,
absolutely.
You know, you have 15 different revisions to every sentence, and you lose track pretty quick if you don't have Word.
No, you have no choice in that regard. I only put it on one machine for review purposes. I'm not going to put it on anything else. I don't think it's a particularly nice, attractive product.
I've moved to iWork for just about everything.
Numbers has one thing that drives me crazy. You cannot lock, you know, like at the title, so that as you scroll down, you can see what those columns are.
Yeah.
Just, that drives me crazy. I don't understand why they would leave that out. It's like kind of fundamental.
They just didn't think about it. They'll fix it.
They'll put it in, I know. But it's one of those. There are like 3 of those that mean you have to use Excel after.
Well,
that.
You know, here's the thing, though. I mean, for most people, I mean, Numbers is something they can actually use.
Oh, I agree. There's a lot. I mean, I tell a lot of people, use Numbers. Why are you using Excel?
You know, well, and the other thing is crazy.
Yeah.
A lot of people are building forms with Excel. You know, like, well,
crazy.
When we're managing, stuff, a lot of production forms are all built that you fill out while you're on set or that you're planning or all these layouts of stuff. You're not using any of the calculations.
Right.
And they're building them in Excel, and that's just a painful way to go. Yeah. I mean, Numbers is so much better for laying that kind of stuff.
I can say unequivocally, though, if you're into linear algebra, you prefer Excel.
I would agree with you.
All 6 of you.
Are you into linear algebra there, Scott?
I am. It's sort of a hobby. I use it to create linear synthesis tools for synthesizers and music.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Just, you know, in my spare time.
When I solve quadratic equations, I do it with Excel. Finally, the Beatles rumor. On, off, on. Paul McCartney says, yeah, we're going to sell on iTunes, but not until after I get my money out of that bitch. he's waiting till the divorce decree is final because he doesn't want, what's her name?
Celebrity voices impersonated by Leo Laporte.
Badly
Finally, we Apple people have our Yoko.
We do.
You're the people who broke up the Beatles and iTunes.
We have our Yoko. She's getting like $30 million for her 2-year marriage to Paul, Sir Paul. But he wants to keep that $400 million to himself.
I consider marrying him for $30 million.
I'd do it for 10% of that, depending on. yes, Scott, I'm underbidding you. I don't care.
Now, the question is this true? Because Michael Jackson says, no, it's not true.
Does Michael Jackson own anything anymore?
He owns the Beatles catalog.
No. He's leveraged that thing 52 times.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, he doesn't own it in the clear.
I mean, his name might be buried down there like 52 owners ago, but some bank owns it.
Well, Sony ATV Music Publishing, it's called. It's a joint venture between Sony and MJ. Says that the Beatles catalog reports are untrue. Now, this is where it's confusing. Who owns the rights? EMI owns the recording rights to the Beatles catalog. The publishing rights are owned by Michael.
Yeah, and that's all that matters when it comes to iTunes.
And, of course, they would have been informed had a deal been done.
Yep. I tend to believe it's not happening yet.
So maybe it's not true.
But I can't. I mean, it's not happening because of Michael.
Do you think Paul was listening to our show? Do you think maybe he's hoping a Yellow Submarine iPod will come out?
It'd be a bloody good deal.
Oh, I think he should do it. Well, you know, I don't know. I'm sad if it's not true.
We have a Beatles-related rumor on this show nearly every week. I just want to point that out.
This is part of the deal.
Part of the deal. Part we should call this Mac Break and Beatles Weekly.
Yeah, the Yellow Submarine Show. So,
very thin white line going from the lapel of John's coat to his pocket on the Abbey Road album. Now, it's about the same gauge, not as a modern iPod, but as a first generation iPod.
Is he listening to headphones? Earbuds? Early earbuds?
I'm not saying. I'm just saying get out. You can't see it on the CD art, but if you get out like the old LP art, it's there. It's there. I'm saying it's there.
We found the answer to who was on the grassy knoll.
I will be really sad. Somebody, some young person opined, who cares? Who would want to buy the Beatles? I care. If they offered that same $99 deal they did for the Led Zeppelin for the entire Beatles collection, wouldn't you? I mean, I've bought every album. and every 8-track and every CD, but I still would buy this.
It would totally run a BitTorrent.
I own every Beatles CD available, and I have already ported each and every one to my iPod.
So you don't need it.
I don't need it, but I might be tempted, as you would, to buy it just to support it.
Especially if it came with a yellow submarine.
Ooh.
We're going to do our picks in just a second. Our selections for software. But before we do that, ladies and germs, it's time to remind you about Audible.com. Audible.com, the great place to get all your books recorded by professional voice talent, not like us. By people who actually sound good, who make the book sound good, who bring it to life. I was listening to a book. Oh, my gosh. This is the funniest book, called The Dog of the South. Have you ever heard of this book? Oh, my gosh. It's funny. But the guy who reads it is just given, Charles Portis just gives it, brings it to life. Because it's a comic novel. But the Ray Midge, who's the hero of the comic novel, is tracking his wife Norma down. Norma ran off with her first husband. And he's gone to San Miguel de Allende. Ends up driving a doctor down to British Honduras, as they call it. It's just the wildest, funniest novel by Charles Portis. Read by Charles Portis. No, wait a minute. Written by Charles Portis, read by Edward Lewis. I'm sorry. Let me get that straight. And it is such a good read. Andy, did you have a book recommendation too? I don't want to ace you.
Oh, no. I took a few weeks off, so I've had like Audible books sort of stacking up.
How many a week do you do?
I usually get through one a week.
Wow.
I should say not all the Audible picks started off as Audible books. Most of them start off as books that I just really liked in analog, old fashioned, you know, dead tree wear. And then just you flip over to the audiobook at some point.
Sometimes it goes the other way. I listened to John Adams on audible.com, and David McCullough reads his incredible biography of John Adams. And at the time they only had the abridged version. They now have the unabridged.
Yeah,
and so I bought the book. I mean, I had to have the book. It was so good.
You can't have the snack pack on McCullough. You need to get the whole thing. But that actually is exactly one of the reasons why I picked this book for this particular week. One of my favorite novelists that I have the most interesting relationship with is Neil Gaiman.
I love Neil.
Yeah, I mean he's at any given time I will have 5 or 6 Neil Gaiman novels on the shelf, one of which I've reread and reread and reread to death. The second one I've read once or twice and are probably going to read again. And 3 that I've just sort of banked, that I bought it when it first came out because he's on that list of I buy it as soon as it comes out. Yeah. The only difficulty I find with him is that he writes a lot of novels where they really do require and demand your full attention.
Yeah.
You can't have that's why they're in the bank. They're waiting for that week I have off and I'm going to be vacationing where I can just simply spend 3 or 4 hours doing nothing but reading and not checking my email, not worrying about a deadline tomorrow, just doing stuff like that. And one of the most interesting things for him as an audiobook author is that his style of storytelling truly is storytelling, not really reading. It is sitting with a fire in proximity, hopefully within a fireplace, while Neil Gaiman tells you this story he's come up with. And you spend whatever time it is to hear this story, whether you're reading it or hearing it, alternating between being totally captivated by the story, totally captivated by the storyteller, and wondering if this guy is not just completely barking mad and his smile is concealing an intent to leap over the fire and pull you down someplace where you don't want to be.
You've been reading American Gods again, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly. So my pick is actually Fragile Things, which is read by Neil. He tends to narrate nearly all of his audiobooks that I've come across. So you're getting it right from the source, right from the intent, from the original intent. The great thing about Fragile Things is that it's a collection of short stories. So that if you're one of these folks who likes to listen to these stories and listen to audiobooks in the car or on flights, not just you don't want to make that big like 500-page, 5-CD commitment of listening through. These are stories you can get through very relatively quickly. You can really immerse yourself in. And he is an absolute master storyteller. It also includes some of my absolute favorite things that he's ever written, including one of them is sort of a sequel. I can't remember whether it's a sequel or no, it's a sequel to American Gods. It's a short story involving Shadow in a Scottish mansion.
Oh, great. I'll have to. I haven't read this. I'm going to have to get this. This sounds great.
It's probably it's it's probably my best, my favorite individual book that he's written.
There's a short story set in the world of the Matrix.
Yeah, it's a really wide ranging collection. He's got a new one coming out. I've been reading his blog. He's got a new book called The Graveyard Book that's coming out this fall that I just want. Neil, I want to be your friend. I want to be one of those people that suddenly just receives one of these like pre-release galleys in black and white cover just anonymously, and it gets to read it 2 months in advance because I cannot wait to read this book. This is going to be one of those books, the Graveyard Book. He makes it sound so interesting in his blog, neilgaiman.com, that I just know that I'm not going to bank this one. I'm going to cancel stuff for 2 or 3 days to make sure that it's actually a shorter novel, I think. But I'm going to cancel stuff for a day or two just so I can make sure I can really get the comfy chair, get the cool, soothing beverage, make sure there's a flashlight nearby in case I need some extra light in the room suddenly, and just enjoy the stuff. But I don't think you can go wrong at all with Neil Gaiman's Fragile Things with Audible. It's one of the most satisfying audiobooks, full stop, that I've ever had.
I'm going to play a little bit of it just so we can hear it, because I haven't heard Neil's reading. And then I want to tell you a story about Neil, because we interviewed him on the Screensavers, and that was a really exciting moment.
And every now and again, the cake tastes better than you ever could have dreamed it would. A Study in Emerald won the Hugo Award in August 2004 as Best Short Story.
This is from the
forward. Something that still makes me intensely proud.
Yeah, you can tell he can read and talk. He can talk. He can read. Yeah. He can bring it to life. That's great. A lot of times I don't like authors reading their own books because they're, well, better writers than there are readers, but
he's a storyteller.
Clearly,
by nature. I think that if he could come to you, if he could come to everybody's house and just read his stuff aloud for every single reader, that would probably make him on some level much, much happier. Not so much his wife, not so much his kids, but
we'd but be happier. We'd be happier. We interviewed him on the Screensavers, and he, you know, we used to get people to go behind the set and sign the set, and he signed the set and, I think he drew a little drawing of the Sandman on the set.
I can actually top that a little bit. I have in my possession an original creative piece of original creative story, poem, koan, whatever you want to say, the one and only collaboration between Neil Gaiman and an Apple Newton message pad. Because I went to a signing I went to a book signing at a comic book shop in Kendall Square in Boston, like 91, 92. And I had him sign my copy of, I think it was Books of Magic, but I also had my Newton message pad with me. And so I said, please, you know, we'd like to sign my message pad. I forgot to put it into graphic mode. And so it kept trying to interpret his signature into text. And so he signed his name and then it turned into text. So he kind of like frowned a little bit, signed again, and turned into text. Like, oh my God, it's like consulting the Oracle at Delphi. I never know. I make a koan. I never know what it's going to come back with. And so it still is there on my
Newton. Saved it? Like,
I've got, it's like four sentences. It's actually quite Neil Gaiman-esque. I've thought about just, you know, printing out one copy and auctioning it off for like the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund or something.
Yeah.
Because even Neil himself does not know this text that he has written. It's a collaboration, of course, but
a collaboration between Neil and the Newton. I like it.
And Russian handwriting recognition software, a combative partnership to be sure, but it yielded some interesting things.
Very cool. Well, that's our pick, and a great pick. I can't wait. I just put it in my wish list. That's one of the things you can do. It's kind of like the queue for Netflix. You put it in your wish list, and then the next time you have a credit, you can buy it. If you don't yet have an account, please go to audible.com/MacBreak, A-U-D-I-B-L-E, audible.com/MacBreak, and sign up. You can get a credit toward a book, and that way you can get Fragile Things for free. Very cool. 10 hours and 51 minutes of Neil Gaiman. That's our pick for the week, and we do thank Audible so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. I'm flying out to Newark to meet with them in about a month. Some exciting stuff going on I can't tell you about. But I shall when the time comes. Let us move on to our picks of the week. And I'm going to start this time because I have this little mini pick. So, I'm going to just do my little mini pick, and then you guys can do the real pick. But at least my picks are free, and there are actually a couple of them. Jeffrey Friedel wrote an incredible book that I love, read, and keep with me at all times, called Mastering Regular Expressions. He's the king of grep. If you want to understand grep, you must read this book, but that's not my pick. He apparently also is a pretty good darn programmer, because he has written two plugins, actually, I think more than two plugins, for Lightroom that allow you to quickly upload your Lightroom pictures to Flickr with just as a preset. They're very simple, but they really, really work very well, and they're extensible. He's made this extensible architecture so that people can add to it. He has a Lightroom export plugin for Flickr that does a lot of very cool things. I know you guys are Aperture guys, but I'm a Lightroom guy, and I just happen to love it. It'll also work, I think, for SmugMug, which is what I use it for, and Zenfolio. So it's on Friedel's site. They're free. Regex, regex.info. But he should put a link on the front page, because and he's always updating this. So there's the newest version, 1.3, supports Leopard, supports the Nikon D3 and D300. It gives you a lot of settings and so forth, so that you can completely control how it gets uploaded. And finally, as I said, it has an SDK, so that people can kind of add to the capabilities of this plugin. I really love it. I've used a number of different plugins in Lightroom to get my stuff up to Flickr. This is absolutely the easiest way. And since I'm a Flickr and SmugMug user, it really solves the problem for me in one swell foop. Absolutely free. Highly recommended from Jeffrey Friedel. Thank you, Jeffrey, both for your book on Regex. Because that I tell you, anytime I have to write a regular expression, I have to drag your book out. Second edition is really good, but also for the Lightroom 1.3 export plugins for SmugMug, Zenfolio, and Flickr. That's my pick. Zero Alex's for that one. Scott Bourne, you got something for us?
I do. I've been playing around with trying to translate some words from various languages into English and so forth, because on TWIP we've been getting a lot of international email, and for some reason many of our listeners just assume that I'm fluent in their language. And
Scott Bourne, of course, use his iPhone to understand everything? He has a vest made of them.
Well, actually, to tell you the truth, I do now.
See?
Because of a program called Ultralingua, which is available for the iPhone and the Touch.
Sounds it's sexy.
$29.95. And it translates into a bunch of different languages. It's also a great dictionary. It's amazing what it can do. And I picked it because I actually found it when I was just looking for a good dictionary. And it has an amazing dictionary in it. But the ability to very quickly translate words back and forth is pretty amazing. And
it's a web app.
Yeah, it's a web app. And you can use it on the regular web, of course.
Right.
But it has the ability, and by the way, it works on Windows Mobile, all kinds of smartphones.
Now, see, this is where you wish that you had cut and paste.
Yes, and we will in June. And here are just some of the translation dictionaries: French to English, Spanish to English, German, Portuguese, Italian, Norwegian, French, German, French, etc. My personal favorite is the Esperanto English translations. There's even like Grammatica for it.
Why do I get the impression that Andy Yannacko speaks Esperanto?
I wondered, frankly.
Don't you think that he does, though?
He might.
He seems like the kind of guy who would actually, it's either that or a Klingon.
Yeah. Anyway, obviously there's a lot of stuff in here, but I actually just got it because of the English definitions in thesaurus initially, and then found out it had a French definitions and synonyms section and all these translations for $30. I mean, if you do any of this kind of work, it'll pay for itself really quickly, and it's very low price, and you can get it at ultralingua.com.
Excellent. So I presume that everybody who does stuff like this is working hard, beavering away to do it as a standalone app, yeah?
I'm assuming that they've got an SDK in their pocket.
Why do you say that we'll have cut and paste in June?
Oh, we will. Trust me. Just trust me.
You think that's part of 2.0?
I do.
You have to have it.
Yeah. Well, we'll have stuff like parental controls, cut and paste, a lot of things you haven't seen yet.
Good.
Search.
That was the thing I loved about the Palm when it came out, man. That was so cool. You could search everything.
And if for some reason Apple drops the ball on what I believe they're going to do or what I've heard rumors they're going to do, then trust me, one of these third-party apps will come to the rescue and solve these problems. But
tricky, though, if you don't have, you know, you can't run in the background. That's something you need to run in the background to do.
Yeah, I don't know how they'll pull it off, but I'm convinced that with some of John Doerr's money, somebody will figure it out.
There's enough.
And I've already emailed, you know, this company to say, I hope you got the SDK, and they didn't email me back. But I would love to see this dictionary as a native app on the iPhone. It would immediately be the first thing I would personally buy, because I've just come to, you know, sometimes I'll just be sitting around and go, how do you say this in Spanish? And I'll just type in a word for entertainment. I know that's silly, but I enjoy it.
I think, no, that's kind of fun. In fact, I'm going to use now the lingvo.org traduco to translate for the Esperanto listeners in our audience. I'm going to translate everything you just said into Esperanto. Lingvo.org. And here it is, ladies. I'm sorry, I was going to say ladies and gentlemen. It's Sinjorinoj kaj sinjoro andi enako.
You take that back.
Wait a minute.
My grandmother was a good woman, a good, hard-working woman, something you elitists would never understand.
Yeah, parolu this. This is it in synthesis. Apparently, they have a speech synthesizer on here as well. Here, it's going to speak it.
Signorino e cae signor.
Signor. It sounds like Portuguese.
Great. Yeah. So now I have two reasons for not understanding what that was saying.
Signorino cae signoro. Andinaco.
That was pretty good.
Really? You speak it?
Yeah. Heck no, but it sounded convincing to me.
Well, you missed your calling, Leo. UN needs you.
What is your pick, Mr. Enatco?
My pick of the week is actually tied into the Audible pick of the week. One, I found out that one of the stories in Fragile Things is actually available from HarperCollins as a free MP3 download. So you can get one of the best, it's hard not to use superlatives when we're talking about Gaiman, but definitely one of my favorite short stories he's ever done, called A Study in Emerald, just right off of that other book, read by Neil. It's a really powerful story, satisfying on so many levels. It's set in the world of Sherlock Holmes. I will not reveal anything else above that.
Ooh,
because
I like that.
The punch of this is just letting it unfold around you. It's very, very satisfying for fans of Sherlock Holmes. It's very satisfying for fans of Neil Gaiman. It's just a very satisfying thing, full stop. And you can download it for free from HarperCollinsEbooks.com. The name of the publisher plus ebooks.com. It's actually a link right up at the very, very top of that page.
Very good.
It's a straight MP3. No,
absolutely
nothing.
Free. And finally, Mr. Alex Lindsay, the king of the Lindsay.
I have. So mine is a little out there. It's zero Alex's.
Okay.
It is. It's free. And for people who have been in the Mac community for a long time, we used to remember before Bungie was owned by Microsoft. They were, they made Mac programs.
Oh, the best Mac game of all time.
Marathon.
Yay!
And a lot of us were really, really into Marathon.
Yeah.
And we played more than we should have. And we were really tied into it. Well, I was on the flight back with a friend, Stu Mashowitz, who's over at the orphanage. And he said, I have something to show you. And he opened it up. And it's Marathon running on OS X. And of course, I was a little excited. And it turns out they open sourced it.
Yeah.
So source.bungie.org, there is a Marathon open source, and it's been just recently updated with an entirely new Marathon scenario. and the thing is what's great is, you know, we used to have to restart our computers with all the extensions off to play Marathon to get frame rate. Now I turned like every dial to 11, you know, in the settings. And I can't get it to go below 30 frames a second, you know, because every texture map is like 60.
And if you know, Halo really is just Marathon.
It's a bigger version of Marathon. But the idea is that there is something free that we can all play with, we can all develop for, we can all, you know, play.
Is the engine pretty good, you think?
What?
Is the engine pretty good?
I just started running around. I haven't tried doing, you know, Every Man for Himself or anything else that's particularly into it. But what I'm hoping is that a lot of our listeners will go download it.
Yeah.
And then we can start, because they have the whole thing all set up for internet play and being able to do, you know, being able to do tournaments over the internet.
Awesome.
And it's a little retro, which I think is actually fun. I don't, You know, I don't need it to be Halo. You know, I think that it would. You know, I'm hoping that a lot of people will go download it, and then I have more people to play with. You know, that's.
And by the way, Windows, Mac, and Linux. So
Windows, Mac, and Linux. So yeah. You're not. You know, no matter what, you can do it. But this is the. But the. Of course, it started on those of you as I said. I figured that. I hadn't even ever heard of it. I'm sure, you know, it's been out. You know, they really did it in 2000, 2001, but right. They just released a new scenario just at the end of February. And and you can also download high-res textures to ramp up all of the ones so that it looks a little prettier. And anyway, I'm going to be curious to see. I warned the folks on the online thing. I was kind of like, because I just found out about it, you know, over the weekend. And I was like, you might see a slight bump in traffic. And
you must all download it, and we will have a Mac Break Weekly tournament.
Yeah, we're going to figure that out. So people should download it. They should acquaint themselves with it, and we'll figure out what we're going to do. I don't know when we're going to do it. I don't know how we're going to do it, but we're going to do it.
So, I think that's great.
So, and it's free. You can just go download it. You can play it. It's a great game and a lot of fun.
Does somebody have to run a server for that? I guess so, huh?
I think so, but I think that there's server trackers. I haven't figured all that out, but we'll do an update after we get it. Really,
let's figure it out, and we could.
The only way to figure it out is for lots of people to download it and get on, so we can figure out.
And maybe we could do it like after you know, the release day every Wednesday evening. We could have a marathon tournament when the show comes out.
I can host it on my server if we need to.
Okay. Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Yeah. So that's my pick for the week.
Excellent picks. Excellent show all around. Merlin Mann couldn't be with us. He's changing diapers, but he will be back next week. He's kind of got a sticky situation. But he will be back next week, as we will all be, to discuss everything going on in the world of Macintosh. I hope you will join us as well. And Andy, somebody sent me the Andy Yanako ringtone for the iPhone. We'll have to make that available as well. I don't know if you remember that, but a couple episodes ago you did an iPhone ringtone, and it's preserved for all eternity now.
I just want to be here for you, the listeners.
No matter where, in your phone. Thank you, everybody. Another Mac Break.
It was broke.